direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
James, we have 3 hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, I'll make sure it's mine, and I've already picked out your 11 requests that you want to hear, so there. But yeah, of course, we'll take more for future use. Now, thanks to Engineer Bob, who is keeping us on the air tonight. He sends me these great links, and this one was about 10 small towns where the law gets weird. Now, interestingly, I take objection to the concept of small towns because one of them actually is a suburb of Chicago, and that's Cicero. Yeah, I don't think there's anybody who thinks Cicero is a small town. All right, well, there might be somebody, but no one I know. All right, so the law in Cicero, and you'll have to check it out, humming is banned on Sundays. Now, some of these laws have actual providence where they tell you exactly when it was passed and all that. Apparently, they just say this dated back to a puritanical era. I don't know when that was in Cicero, but okay. When Sundays were strictly reserved for quiet contemplation and religious observance, any form of frivolous noise was considered disrespectful to the Sabbath. And according to the people who researched and wrote this article, it's still on the books. And, of course, the scary thing about laws still on the books is that they can be enforced. Usually they're not, but they can be. Gainesville, Georgia? Well, that is the chicken capital, don't you know? Self-proclaimed chicken capital. Poultry capital of the world. And in 1961, the town passed a law making it illegal to consume fried chicken with anything other than your bare hands. I didn't know that anybody was trying, but okay. And it was originally a publicity stunt to promote the poultry industry, but it is technically enforceable to this day. So, yeah, having those chicken wings, well, who's going to use a fork anyway? So there you go. We've got Wilbur, Washington, where riding ugly horses is prohibited. Now, of course, this begs the question, what determines if the horse is ugly? Wouldn't other horses be the arbiter of that? But they've outlawed riding ugly horses down city streets. And no one has come up with who decides what's ugly or exactly what happens if you're arrested for this, but it's on the books and you could be. Pocatello, Idaho, smiling is mandatory. Well, they have to make it mandatory. Otherwise, there's very little reason to smile in Pocatello, trust me. It was a 1948 ordinance that made it illegal not to smile in public. City leaders wanted to promote a more positive, welcoming atmosphere in their community. Oh, man. I say that because I'm thinking of the Boys of Boise. Read the book if you don't know. Technically, walking around with a scowl on your face could get you in trouble with the law. I don't know that there's any enforcement, but probably turn you into your bishop. Carmel, California. High heels require a permit if they are more than 2 inches. That's right. A permit dates back to the 1920s. It was actually a law. City Council puts it on the book. Why? To protect the city from liability lawsuits. Because the streets are charming and notoriously uneven, filled with all sorts of quirky design features, and therefore twisting an ankle is a real hazard, particularly when you're on stilts, so to speak. And so, therefore, rather than fix the streets, the city officials decided to require permits for anybody wanting to wear stilettos around town. Then we have Blythe, California. where you must own two cows, minimum of two, if you want to wear cowboy boots. That's right, required by law to own at least two cows. And apparently this was aimed to prevent city slickers from appropriating authentic cowboy culture without earning the right. So apparently cowboy boots are functional workwear for actual cowboys, not a fashion statement for posers. Nobody in Blythe enforces this, to the best of my knowledge. They'd settle for anybody coming through town, and usually it's because they're on I-10. And that's right, stopping for some fast food. And that's about it. And there are people who have been seen in Blythe strutting in their cowboy boots without a cow to their name. Now, here's one. Marshalltown, Iowa, where it is illegal for a horse to eat a fire hydrant. Now, you say to yourself, and what precipitated this? Yeah, it's apparently there's nothing on record which talks about why this was passed. It dates back to the days when horses were the primary mode of transportation that we get. But exactly what, horse hydrant munching incident prompted this legislation remains a mystery. And wouldn't you love to know? Yeah, I wouldn't think they were of interest to anybody. In Yamal, Oregon, fortune telling is forbidden. And actually, this is something that was on the books in a lot of places at the turn of the last century, in the 1890s through 1910s, because fortune telling was really big, and table tipping and all that, and the Fox sisters, and you betcha. So predicting the future was something that was considered to be a scam. Gee, I wonder why. Well, apparently, it's still illegal in Oregon, in Yamal anyway. 1,200 people in town explicitly bans fortune telling. I don't know what they do with those 1-800 advertisements that you hear. California psychics or any of those. So, right. Miss Cleo's gone, so I guess we don't have to worry about her. But no palmistry, no mystic arts. And as I say, these laws were commonplace across America and designed to protect the citizenry from charlatans of all stripes. But what's interesting is pretty much everywhere else, they purge the law from the books. Not there. Then you have Paulding, Ohio, with a law where it is illegal for a police officer to bite a dog. Now, you'd normally expect it to be illegal for the dog to bite a police officer, but exactly how you would police that, so to speak, would be difficult. But in this case, it is illegal for a police officer to bite a dog, even in self-defense. Yeah, and so I don't know why they had a spate of overenthusiastic law enforcement, but apparently something led to that. And then it's also not a small town, to San Antonio, not by a long shot, but nonetheless, flirtation is forbidden. It's still on the books. Using your eyes to catch someone's attention romantically is against the lawsuit. So the city has an ordinance that prohibits flirtation and, quote, offensive ogling, unquote, in public places. And apparently goes back to the Victorian era, nonetheless, trying to protect fair ladies and lasses and all that. But apparently the law specifically mentions making eyes at someone or using hands to communicate romantic interest. Yeah, I can kind of see why they didn't repeal it, because it's one of those kind of nostalgic things. But I haven't heard anybody of anybody who'd been arrested, at least not lately. They got other problems. All right, so that's what was on my mind. We'll get to Marty in Whiting and Ruth in Gurnee and Cindy in Chicago and Nick in Northwest Chicago and Fran in Austin. So that's the lineup. We will begin in moments, but right now, if you listen to this show, one thing I know about you is you love radio, or you couldn't put up with me. And if you do, well, you probably know all about the Sea Crane Company, but if not, go to ccradio.com, ccradio.com. You're going to see a lot of wonderful products all developed by Bob Crane, and the commonality to all of them is they have terrific reception, AM and FM, dating back to the days when you'd buy a radio and it might look good and it might have great bass and treble and all that, but it didn't pick anything up worth a darn. And that was a real problem for a long time, and still, man, you can get a lot of radios without great reception. Well, that won't happen with the Sea Crane Company, because the reception is excellent in every one of these products. But in addition to excellent AM and FM reception is a number of other features, depending on what you're looking for in a radio. And their emergency radio is my absolute favorite. And the reason it is because invariably, if I have an emergency radio, there's the emergency and the batteries are dead. Or if it's a solar radio, well, there's the emergency, but I didn't keep it out in the sun long enough. Yeah, bottom line is it's a brick. Well, with the Sea Crane emergency radio, I'll tell you what, it will work no matter what. The CC Radio Solar with Bluetooth. It's about the size of a brick. It's got a clean, modern digital design. It's got five easy one-touch memories. It's got that great AM and FM reception. Excellent audio as far as that goes. And it even doubles as a Bluetooth speaker. The audio is good enough that you want to use it for that. But where it shines ahead of any other emergency radio, sure, if you've got an AC adapter, you can use power. Sure, if the batteries are, working, you can use battery. Sure, if you've left it out in the sun, you can use solar, and it is a nice oversized solar panel. But if all else fails, it's got a little crank on the back. You hand crank it for about 30 seconds. It's going to play for about 30 minutes, and no matter what, you will have radio when you need it. Now, that's peace of mind as far as I'm concerned. It's not only AM and FM and that great reception, but the weather band and weather alerts from NOAA as well. And as I say, good sound can double as your Bluetooth speaker. So go to ccradio.com anytime, and you look at the CC Radio Solar with Bluetooth. If you can't go online, you can call them. They've got great customer service. They'll answer all your questions, and you can order by phone, and that's 800-522-8863, 800-522-2. Now, if you're saying to yourself, I need it tomorrow, well, you can go to Amazon. But before you do that, go to ccradio.com and look at the CC Radio Solar. I think you're going to like it. It may be exactly what you need to save you during that next emergency. You tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio. James, and it was Mike in Cleveland who requested that. The Embers, Wait For Me, 1960 on Dot. No, it had nothing to do with the North Carolina Embers, to say the least. This was a group from Queens, and in fact, Lawrence Keyes, the guy who did A Noisy Clock, he wrote that. So that was 1960 on Dot, and Mike wanted to hear it, and that was fine with me. All right, so 888-876-5593, kicking it off with Marty in Whiting. What's happening tonight, Marty?
Good evening, Raleigh. How are you doing tonight?
Cannot complain. How about your bad self?
Same thing. Can't complain.
All right.
It's ironic that you just mentioned all those laws. My family moved from Encino, we moved to Paulding, Ohio. I went to first and second grade in Paulding, Ohio, where a policeman can't bite a dog.
Now, did you know that about Paulding at the time? I bet you they didn't teach you that in school.
Mm. No, they didn't. I ran from some cops in Paulding, but I never wanted to bite a dog. But
there you go. Yes, Northwest Ohio. What, they got about 3,000 people? I think it's not far from Fort Wayne.
No, it's like about 35 miles from Fort Wayne.
Yeah.
and which I lived in Fort Wayne too, but my mom was born there.
Ah.
And then when she, and remember, if you, well, I don't expect you to remember, but that's when she got pregnant at an early age and then moved to L.A. But, but yeah, I about fell off the couch when you mentioned Paulding, Ohio, of all the places.
Yeah. All right.
Well, the reason I'm calling, I've got two questions. One involves your knowledge of music. This past weekend, they had a big article about this band around the Chicago area, and they've gotten into this busking. And I do not, I read the whole article. What is busking?
Oh, it is street performances. And so you'd wind up with something that was catchy or very familiar, and you'd try to grab the attention of people walking by. So the set list would be the stuff that was really recognizable, like pop hits or whatever. And mm-hmm. But different music, different environments. Obviously, you know, there are some places where it's going to be folk and other places where it's going to be blues. Hell, you can hear it in some places where it's bossa nova. And whatever. So, you know, they actually build set lists to do this. And, you know, exactly why and what, who the hell knows. But that's what, as far as I know, that's exactly what it is. It's, you know, street performing and in any public place. Okay. Subway station. Yeah. Yeah, you name it.
They had set up their equipment, I guess a week or so ago, but apparently this band, it's called Holly, but they got a pretty good following, and they play, what they say, rock and it's a little bit of country, but it's like, if I've heard that term before, it's been a long time, but like, after I read that whole article, I just cannot grasp what busking meant, but you explained it pretty well. So that answers that question, and this will be my last question.
By the way, let me mention that it's nothing new. The term busking goes back to the 1800s, and in the UK, and supposedly it comes from a Spanish verb, buscar, meaning to seek, and then they, you know, put the suffix, the ing suffix. So you know, they're seeking. What they're seeking, of course, not only attention, but, you know, let's get some tips here, put some money in the hat, some gifts, or you know, all that. So it was used in Great Britain, in Great Britain slang, as early as like the 1850s, and so it's nothing new. But you're right, you don't hear it much anymore, but lately you'll hear about it. But it's street performing.
Okay. So then the next question,
yes.
Since I've been beginning of the year, I'm listening to the radio a lot more, staying away from TV. It's WCPT, and I don't understand why they do this, but you can help me out. But Monday through Friday, well, from 6 o'clock in the morning, Raleigh, until like 8:30, tonight was 8:45,
mm-hmm.
It's pretty much talk radio.
Right.
But then all of a sudden, it just goes off the air.
Well, it's 8:20 on the dial. It probably has to. that's why. It's a daytimer. Is he run down at sundown? That's it'll be earlier in the winter. You know, it has to do with local sunset. And particularly local sunset for the station it's protecting, which at 8:20 would be WBAP in Fort Worth.
Does it have anything to do with, they also have a podcast. I guess you can pay $6 a month. not for the whole, I think it's just for this one from 7 o'clock. But like last, I think it was like last Thursday or Friday, it was like 8:30 went out. And tonight I'm listening to the people talk. It was like 8:45, but it has something to do with the dial?
What, you know, I can't begin to tell you. By the way, I think they've got some nighttime coverage. Hang on a minute. Don't go away, and I'll tell you more about them after the news. But it is time for the news, so
okay.
Hang on. We'll talk about it in moments on WGN Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4.
In the law. Some people value fortune and fame. I don't care about them none. Just wanna drink my ripple wine. I wanna have my good time fun. Have my good time fun.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Hoyt Axton from the Joy to the World album on Capitol in 1971, Lightning Bar Blues. And that was a request from Jay in Cincinnati last night. And yeah, I like Hoyt Axton. I think my favorite probably because of the title. You got to love it. It was a flip side in 1977 on MCA, but You're the Hangnail in My Life.
You're the dead corsage that's in my Frigidaire. You're the flaky specks of dandruff in my hair. You're the tickle in my throat that makes me cough. You're the hangnail in my life, and I can't bite you off.
All right, so isn't he sentimental, don't you think? He wrote it, of course, but actually Lightning Bar Blues became more popular a year later when Arlo Guthrie had it on a well-selling album. So a lot of people have covered it, though. So there you go, Jay in Cincinnati. I hope he'll call again. All right, so now we were talking to Marty in Whiting, and yes, about the 820 and 850. All right, so yes, yeah. Shall we waltz down memory lane? You know, got a couple frequencies involved there, and 820 was Gene Dyer's station, and that was CBD probably till the 40s, and then Lloyd Webb bought it, and you'll remember these call letters, WAIT, and that was beautiful music from like mid-40s to the 80s, and then Century, the Grafmans out of St. Louis bought it, Shelley Grafman, and they acquired it, and they brought in Cozy, WCZE, and then you had Diamond, which was The Score. You'll remember that because that was the 90s. And then CBS had it. And I think that was still The Score. And then Douglas had it briefly. And that Douglas thing, oh, man, I remember this guy. It was Your Personal Achievement, WYPA Radio. And it was like, you know, all that kind of motivational stuff and, you know, think and grow rich kind of things. And then it went back to sports, and I guess you could go grow rich if you bet on the right stuff. But in any event, that was CSN, and then it was NewsWeb, and then Heartland has it now. Now, let's move over to 850, because they dovetail. 850 didn't really start until the mid-60s. That was Mal Belairs, and he was actually a pretty well-known personality, and he had WIVS Crystal Lake. And they sold it within a few years for, you know, $1.5 million. It became Pride, and then it became AIT. Gee, where have we heard those call letters before? And from there, it went to NewsWeb. That was, Fred, I forget his last name. But anyway, it became Progressive Talk, CPT. And that really was till 2020. And what they did at that point was they returned the license, the 850, back to the FCC. And so the FCC, you know, they had to turn off the transmitter and prevent frequency crowding and all that kind of stuff. So what you're listening to now probably is the 820. Now, it does have some nighttime power today, but when they broke up the clears in the 80s, allowing certain nighttime broadcasters to be there, it was very limited about what those signals could do. So this sucker has six towers at night in order to do it. And it's, you know, non-directional in the day, but at night it's severely directional, to say the least. So anyway, why are we talking about it?
Well, I'm just curious why they went off, why they would go off the air and not start again until 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, but, you know, you covered it pretty well. and you got other callers, but I would like to put a request in.
Yeah.
Now,
by the way, let me say that this is interesting that you would ask that, because technically they are licensed to continue at night with those six towers. And if I had to guess, what's going on here is their nighttime pattern. There's something with it or something with those towers, so they're operating as a daytimer. And we used to call them rundown at sundown. And so sundown local time would be exactly why they, in the summer, turn it off about 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So now you know.
Yeah, tonight it was like mid-sentence, and all of a sudden just the room was talking, and all of a sudden just went dead.
That's interesting. Well, it probably is on a timer as far as that goes. It's probably unattended operation. And, I've known some stations that I swear they were on a lamp timer. You know, you're not supposed to be. But in terms of when they went off, that would be the case. But so that's most likely is it's just an automation thing. It's like, oh! It's a local sundown, Fort Worth time to sign off, and they do.
Well, that answers my question. Mm-hmm. Thank you, because even at my age at 63, I still got that curiosity kills the cat bone in me. But here's my request, because this past Saturday, he would have turned, if he was still alive, he would have turned 97. But Screamin' Jay Hawkins was born in Cleveland this past Saturday in 29. So I'm not that familiar with his music other than that he's a blues singer. So I like to, whatever you think, tomorrow night, if you got it, you'd Screamin' Jay Hawkins.
I have a lot of it. Now, he was a very interesting guy because he was a drunk. And I mean a rip-roaring drunk. And the only hit he had, he could only do drunk. He was not capable of singing this if he were sober. And that's, I put a spell on you. And he was going around the country, you know, part of the package shows where they'd have, seven acts, and one of them would be Screamin' Jay Hawkins. Well, Screamin' Jay Hawkins, for his act, came out of a coffin for I Put a Spell on You. Well, one time in Baltimore, one of the promoters didn't know the difference, and the guy had a casket. They're saying, Screamin' Jay Hawkins, no casket, I need a coffin. And so this was, he was ready not to perform. But the worst was what happened with the Drifters. This was 1960, and the guy who owned the name the Drifters was George Treadwell, and he got upset at the first group of Drifters and fired them. And literally, he got a new group of Drifters, and that was Benny King's group, who were appearing at the Apollo as the Five Crowns. He said, okay, you guys will be the Drifters. But he didn't want to actually do much in the studio until they got some chops and went out and recorded. So they were doing this year tour with the Drifters, these new Drifters. So, okay, they're on a bill with Screamin' Jay Hawkins. Fine. Now, by the way, the coffin that Screamin' Jay used, obviously he'd pop out of it. So what he would do is he'd usually keep a matchbook where that's be so it wouldn't latch or anything like that, so he could come out. All right, well, you know what's coming, of course. So here are the Drifters, and one of them accidentally bumped the coffin. There went the matchbook. So Screamin' Jay didn't know it. He gets in there, he starts his performance, and he can't get out. And so now he's shaking it, he's rocking it, and everybody thinks it's part of the bit. I mean, he's practically walking this coffin off the stage. And finally, he breaks it open and, does his number. But he swore, drunk as a skunk, he swore that the Drifters were trying to kill him. And so, in any event, that's Screamin' Jay. And he never had another hit, but he had some very odd records. And of course, I Put a Spell on You was covered by everybody and their brother. But you remember, right. I Put a Spell on You, I'm sure. But the guy actually tried to sing country at one point. And you can imagine, if you've heard I Put a Spell on You, you know what that must have sounded like. He also did a record called Strange, which was hilarious. I'll play you some of that. But I'll play you some of Strange, and I'll play you him trying to be country with Take Me Back to My Boots and Saddle.
And he started off as a blues singer, I'm assuming.
Well, yeah, I guess you'd call it that. Everything I know about Screamin' Jay is that this man never, other than he had something like 90 kids. It wasn't really 90, but it was probably like 60 or whatever, as far as that goes. He was from Cleveland. And
right.
he was the baby. He had three older sisters. And what he wanted to be was an opera singer. And his idol was Paul Robeson. Remember him? And Paul Robeson was
I just know the name.
Yeah, big deal. And unfortunately, he was an avowed communist, so that kind of hurt his career for a little while. But anyhow, but he also loved like Mario Lanza or Enrico Caruso. And he wound up joining the army after World War II ended because his high school would have graduated just, you know, after World War II, and if he even got out. But anyhow, he was at Fort Bliss, and he was entertaining the troops, and he was a boxer on the army boxing circuits, and all of that. And when he got out of the service, he started to, you know, actually, I wouldn't necessarily call it blues. He was doing vocals and keyboards for Tiny Grimes, and he was on some of those recordings and all that. And he signed with OK, which is a great little label. It was R&B, but at the time Columbia owned it. But in any event, he would show up wearing like leopard skins and, you know, things like that. Wow. And then here comes I Put a Spell on You. And, you know, when he wasn't drunk, Screamin' Jay Hawkins thought that this I Put a Spell on You, that he'd do it as a refined ballad. I am not making this up. And of course, not only is he drunk as a skunk, but the entire band is intoxicated. And so basically, he just screamed and grunted and gurgled his way through I Put a Spell on You. Yeah, raw guttural, they would say, the critics would call it, and all that kind of stuff. And to his death, he didn't remember the session because he blacked out. And so he had to relearn the song from the recorded version. And of course, when the label put it out, they actually edited, so a lot of the grunts weren't there. And the NAACP absolutely had a fit. They said, this is going to look bad for African Americans. Yeah, no kidding. Look bad for anybody. And so, but the bottom line is it sold. And let's see, I remember the coffin thing. It was Alan Freed who came up with that bit, and he actually offered Screamin' Jay Hawkins money to get out of the coffin. And at first, Screamin' Jay Hawkins said, I'm not doing it because no black dude gets out of a coffin alive. And so, and of course, that's why he was so concerned when the Drifters accidentally locked him in. But, you know, he had all sorts of voodoo props and, you know, a skull on a stick. I think that was Henry, and rubber snakes and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, okay. One critic said he's a black Vincent Price. I'm like, no, that's not it. But in any event, he
well,
was
Well, Raleigh, thank you
huge.
Very much
right.
for all the info. Really appreciate
now you know.
It.
And, okay, you'll hear it.
And getting back to the busking, when I couldn't figure it out on my own, it's like, well, I better call Raleigh.
Now you know.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah. Now, a lot of people, and I'm not playing it, but a lot of people will remember he did Constipation Blues. Yeah, complete with sound effects. You can hear it for yourself. Take Me Back to My Boots and Saddle and Strange. You can bet I'll play that. Yeah. All right. Hadn't thought about him in quite a while. So, all right. We'll do that. We got Ruth, we got Cindy, Nick, and Nick. That's Nick in Northwest Chicago, and Nick in Baltimore, and Fran in Austin. 888-876-5593 if you want that last line available right here on WGN Radio.
How many wrinkles in a pickle? How many hairs in a head? How many waves in the ocean? How many crumbs in bread? And last but not least, but baby, most of all, why do I mother every time I call? You're strange to me, baby. Wow, but you're good to me, mama. Yes, I admit you are strange, but baby, please don't change. I know I belong to you. How many bubbles in soap? How many chewings in gum? How many rolls in a wheel? Where did eyeballs come from? And last but not least, but baby, most of all, why drop mama every time you call? Because you're strange to me, baby. But you're good to me, mama. Whoa, I'll admit you are strange. Oh, baby, please don't change. I know I belong to you. Yeah. How many blanks in a blanket? How many cuts in a knife? How strong is a bed bug and how deep is this bite? And last but not least, but baby, most of all, why do I every time you call? Because you are strange to me, baby. Yeah!
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. As strange as that is, and yes, strange, it's the flip side, by the way, of the whammy. This was on Roulette, and this was a period of time in the 60s, about 64, when Hugo and Luigi were working for Moish Levy at Roulette, and they were the producer of that, for reasons that elude us all. Screamin' Jay Hawkins, of course, wrote it. You just know that. But as I say, he in his heart of hearts, he was a serious performer. He was never sober enough to do it, but nonetheless, occasionally there'd be attempts. And yeah, a country as well.
Take me back to my boots and saddle.
All right, so enough about Screamin' Jay Hawkins, but it is fun to think about. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, and Nick is in Northwest Chicago. So, Nick, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Okay, welcome back. Like, welcome back, Cotter.
Indeed.
Yeah, first I want to mention when you were talking about Cicero, Illinois, which most people know it's an old-fashioned barnery very close to the west of Chicago,
yeah.
Cicero Avenue.
Yeah.
Some of the other boundaries go all the way out. That's 4800 West. Every 8 blocks is 1 mile.
Yeah.
Some go further west, like to Harlem Avenue up on the northwest side, to you know, between Niles and Chicago, another
sure.
suburb that borders Chicago.
Yeah.
But I lived in the early 70s and worked part of time for the U.S. Army as a civilian, as my father did in Munich, Germany. He worked also after World War II.
Okay.
In Munich, Germany. But separately from that, I once went to mail a letter to a friend of mine in Cicero, Illinois. This is just one story. I got a couple of things on the paper I want to bring up. And when I went to the post office, I just go to her and said, in German, I told him, I like to know how much the stamps are, you know, to send us to Cicero, Illinois. And he looked at it, Cicero. I mean, this guy went and showed his friends over there, his co-workers, I should say. Maybe they're his friends, too. And they were all, they want to just hold that letter, you know, on their fingers. And like, as if I knew Al Capone, as if he was still alive. This was about 1970 or 71.
Okay.
And I couldn't get over it, though, the fascination with Al Capone, you know. And there are people even in Chicago, if you went out, not to New York City, but if you went out, like, somewhere maybe out west, San Francisco, when I was out there once in 1971, I was still normal. And, it was beautiful. I fell in love with it instantly. It was just beautiful. And, some people get this incredible image of Al Capone, back then, you know, that he, as if he was still alive and all that. Okay, so that was one story.
Now, by the way, let's mention, because good old Scarface, if you will, Al Capone,
right.
His reign was over by by the time he was 33 years old. And he came to power at 26 or so. So it was only like 6 or 7 years that he was the big deal. But of course...
he was in jail for what, 10 years?
Yeah, right. Well, he went to jail at 33. And But yeah, he was born in Chicago. Actually, he was born in New York City, I think,
right
1899 or thereabouts. Moved to Chicago. As a bodyguard, and of course, you know, Prohibition was wonderful because it gave independent businessmen, so to speak,
all
sorts of jobs, none of them legal.
Yeah.
The outfit and such. So there
in Chicago, they call it the outfit. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So and you know the gangs. I think he was in Five Points and conflict with Northside and all that. So So there were wonderful stories, and of course he loved
he loved
the attention. You know, he was not one who really wanted to be anonymous. So, you know, people there, a lot of people thought he was like Robin Hood. You know, he thought that they were like So there were many people who wanted to see him thrive, and of course you know the government made him public enemy number one, but. And actually, you know, what was he convicted of? Tax evasion, because that's what they could get him for. So,
we could imagine that, not for murdering people or
hang on
whatever.
A minute. Don't go away. Stay exactly. Stay right where you are, and we'll pick it up right after the news. All right. We'll pick it up there on WGN Radio.
Okay.
She called O'Brien, talking about red Lebanese. A dirty room and a silver coke spoon. Give me my release, come on. Black Lebanese, you got your weak in your knees.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. So, yes, it was Billy Bob and Bourbonnais who wanted to hear Humble Pie. Asked if I knew who they were. Yes, absolutely. Steve Marriott, and he was, I forget which band he was in, but that was with Peter Frampton, who was in another band. Anyway, that was Humble Pie. But interestingly, 30 Days in the Hole, when it was released in 72, did absolutely nothing. But for whatever reason, it kind of became an AOR staple. And so people seemed to like it. Actually, probably one of Humble Pie's best-known songs, which is pretty interesting for a single that absolutely did not sell. But there you have it. Now, why would I play that? Well, because when I kind of groaned, Billy Bob said, "Well, you could play Spirit in the Sky." Yeah, Norman Greenbaum, anybody? I thought, you know, it's going downhill. Let's just get it over with Humble Pie. All right, so we did, and hopefully Billy Bob heard it. Now back to Nick in Chicago and gangsters. All right, so you're on.
Well, that was just a side topic because you were talking with somebody about Al Capone there. I had a couple of articles, not full articles, just a couple of little mentions I want to ask you about. But yeah, I remember growing up after my parents moved here from Brooklyn, New York, mm-hmm. and I was just a kid in the early 50s. But growing up in Chicago, some people talk about Al Capone. They remember seeing him walking like down Grand Avenue.
Yeah.
At the time, heavy Italian street. And, between like Halsted and for about a mile west, and he'd be handing out dimes. Now, what's a dime? You know, well, you got to remember, during the Depression era, dime was a big thing. You know,
absolutely,
it's more than giving out a dollar. I think it's like giving out $2 or $3 now.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting, you know. But but I want to mention USA Today. This is from a few days ago. It has birthdays about famous people.
Uh-huh.
I'm not in it, but maybe someday will be. But actor Biddy Schramm, 58 years old. Now, isn't she the one, I believe that's a woman, is she the one that was in the Monk series? Do you remember that? I tried to mention it so you get a little bit of information ahead of time.
You're talking about,
I believe she was the one who was the assistant to Adrian Monk, the one whom my wife loved the subtitle about describing Monk on cable TVIA.
Yeah, she played
nervous,
Sharona. Yeah,
Retired detective or something like that. solves crimes, you know, something like that. And she just loved that. So that's Monk. She loved that show. But anyhow, she's gone on a long time. But anyhow.
But yeah, that's her name was her name was
the woman that replaced her. She was just a milder, cuter looking woman. But this Betty Schramm was like, I remember she was a good looking woman when you look at her on the screen. But that's why, as you know, why they pick guys also to be attractive to women and women to be attractive to men. But do you remember that name, Betty Schramm?
Yeah, absolutely, Bitty, B-I-T-T-Y, Betty Schramm, and she she played. She played Sharona Fleming, and that was the series that was on Monk, Sharona, and then she played Evelyn in A League of Their Own, and she was a New Jersey girl, and wound up doing the movie role, the Penny Marshall film, A League of Her Own, and all that, and she was also she was on Broadway. She did some Neil Simon stuff. And then of course, I guess it was like 2002, she got the Monk thing. And you're right. Halfway through the third season, they, quote unquote, decided to go in a different creative direction. So apparently...
Well, the replacement was better. She was a milder person, looked nicer, more the type of someone to be with Monk, a nervous guy, you know, who retired and he wants to solve crimes.
There was Natalie Teeger, right? Natalie Teeger replaced her. But the reason she was let go, I don't think, had anything to do with her on-screen persona. There was a lot of stuff behind the scenes in that show where the supporting cast did not think they were being paid well enough, and there were a couple who were attempting to negotiate, renegotiate, and all that. And here goes Schramm, and they get rid of her, and it was sort of like, you want to be next? And suddenly they didn't argue as much. And then here came Natalie, who never complained about her pay. And that was the deal.
Yeah, that's how you succeed in at a job in general.
Yeah, well, and there you go.
Yeah. Then another thing from another edition just of USA Today, but not from today, a few days ago, about a Discogs, D-I-S-C-O-G-S.
I'm there every day.
An online marketplace. Yeah. Are you familiar with it?
I'm there every day. I buy things from them weekly.
Ah, okay. And there's a Mikal, M-I-K-A-L, Gilmore. He's the one who's the the guy who was in charge of it.
I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know.
And it says... It says about his family and brother, and his brother, Gary Gilmore, now that might be familiar, who was executed by firing squad in 1977. I'm reading the article after admitting to two murders in Utah.
Right. Well, of course.
And then Gilmore, who declined comment on the sale of, of the things that he has in his record collection, but continues to write on his Nightbeat, quote-unquote Nightbeat Substack, whatever a Substack is. I don't know. It sounds like a sandwich or something.
No, it's not. In any event, Discogs is not only a great buying and selling marketplace, but it's also a real good place to get information on virtually anything that's been released on vinyl. That and 45 Cat are my two favorite places.
Yeah, if you got another minute, that was another thing I was going to bring up, but if you
got
to go...
Yeah, no, what you got? What you got, tell me.
Okay, and the last thing will be, and if you want a drum roll, like they used to do on the Johnny Carson show, I think, the last thing would be the movie The Odyssey. It says here, to give a little plug in Chicago to the Music Box Theater, I was there when the guy who was on your station Monday through Thursday. Is that coincidence that Landecker is on? By the way, I delivered a pizza to him about half a century ago in 1972, and I called him about it on a 50-year anniversary and reminded him. And he remembered, he remembered me coming in there to the studio, and all that, and it was interesting. And so his daughter made a movie called Or Worse, like For Better or For Worse, about a marriage that didn't work out. But anyhow, I went to see it at the Music Box Theater because he kept promoting it on the show. Is there any coincidence that you and his show are Monday through Thursday?
Well, we're both old. We can't do 5 days.
Oh, that's funny.
That's true.
And I'm old, too. I'm 76 years old.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. And, I mean, I assume that the day's coming in the not-too-distant future that I'm doing a three-day-a-week show. I do the best I can. Yeah. But, yeah, people like us, we're not going to be able to do five days a week. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's got to be grueling because people think you just arrive there 5 minutes before. Flip on a microphone. No, I hear so many people talking about getting in like 4 hours before the show starts, getting things ready, getting things straight with the producer and making sure everything goes smoothly.
Well, that's a nice thought, but I actually do show up about 2 minutes beforehand. But unfortunately, in my day life, I own radio stations and cell towers, so I got to run them.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's nice. That's nice that you have all this stuff to do. That's nice. That's interesting, too. So anyhow, the Music Box Theater, it's on a street called Southport Avenue. I believe it's like 1400 West, but people know where it's at. It's a little south of Addison Street. That's a Northwest Side Street.
Uh-huh.
That's where the letter A, Addison Street.
Uh-huh.
You seem to be familiar with it, huh? You're familiar with Chicago?
Yeah, absolutely. I worked in Rockford, so I was in Chicago several times a week. And of course, the other thing is one of my close friends was Eddie Schwartz, and man, did he know Chicago. So anytime I'd come to town, we'd drive around and he'd tell me stories and, all that stuff. He knew everything about everyone.
Didn't he have a nickname, Chicago Eddie?
Yeah, Chicago Schwartz. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he was the producer for a good friend of mine, Robert Morgan, when Robert was at WIND. And so I've known Eddie since then. And I'm sorry he's gone. He was a great guy. And boy, he knew where everything was buried in Chicago.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, it's got to be a lot of things going on still and things. I think that's why some politicians in one party are reluctant to jump all over some politicians of another party.
Yeah, right.
Because they got their own little skeleton somewhere, maybe a little one hanging somewhere in a closet, but
of course.
So the Music Box, it says here, it'll be in traditional 70mm. This was made on film, this movie, not on the digital thing, and made on 70mm film. And it's going to have the rich and textured, I'm reading it, cinematic look.
Okay.
So, so there are other theaters in the area that'll have the full, multi-story thing. Well, I can't stand those things. They're too big. It's like you don't know where to look and what's going to happen next. And, but I like to, when you look at the big screen, you see it, and you don't have to be looking up and down and left and right. So that's it for my session now. And I already asked for a movie, or not a movie.
What did you ask for? I don't remember. What did you ask?
I don't remember exactly either.
I'll find it.
No.
Nick, you wanted to hear Me and You and a Dog Named Boo, and you will get it.
Oh, yeah. Me and You and a Dog Named Boo. Yeah,
I will play that for you. Probably next.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you. Sure. Why not? That was crazy man Phil Gernreich, the guy from North Florida, and of course Lobo. Don't you know? All right. So 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. Oh, we'll get to Nick in Baltimore in a moment. We got Fran in Austin. Cindy's in Chicago. We haven't forgotten about Ruth, and we got James on the South Side on WGN Radio.
How it stuck to the tire after the summer rain. Willpower made that old car go. A woman's mind told me that so. Oh, how I wish we were back on the road again. Me and you and a dog named Boo. Living on the land. Me and you and a dog named Boo.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. So that's for Nick in Northwest Chicago, and that's Kent LaVoy, otherwise known as Lobo, don't you know? And while he was at the University of South Florida, he got to know Phil Gernhardt, who was a well-known Tampa guy. Phil was crazy. There's no other way to put it. Although he did produce Stay by Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs, don't you? But in any event, it was with Gernhardt that he got on labels. He was on Lori for a while, and then on Big Tree, and of course they released Me and You and A Dog Named Boo, and actually, believe it or not, that was the first major hit for Big Tree, reached number 5 in the U.S., and so that was probably more auspicious for Big Tree than Kent, but nonetheless, there you have it. All right, he's still performing. I think he recorded an album like 2 years ago or something, and he was big in Asia, I don't know. So there you have it. Sadly, Phil Gernhardt, well, he's past tense. That's a whole chapter sometime. So 888-876-5593. We'll start with Nick. Nick always reminds me I've got the news, so that's perfect because I think I do in about 2 minutes. But Nick and Ballamer, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Molly. How you doing?
All right. How about yourself?
I'm hanging in there. I can't complain.
Good. What's up?
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine last night. Well, a couple nights ago, actually. And we were talking, you know, we're always talking radio. And he was listening to Air Check Radio. And he was one of our favorite radio stations, which would be the old, the Big 8 out of Detroit, well, Windsor.
Yeah.
CKLW.
Absolutely. And,
going over all that, and I was always a fan of that Drake format. So it's just one of my favorites. I mean, and the 2020 news and the rapid fire delivery.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, of course, that 2020 News started on KHJ when it debuted in May of 65, but it really was the news director at Dick Smith at CKLW that put it on the map with that the inflection and the writing. It just made it not miss stuff. All right, hang on a minute. Don't go away. We'll pick it up right there after the news, which will be, I'm sure, very informative, but certainly not in the 2020 style coming up on WGN Radio.
2 minutes.
Oh, I have 2 minutes. No, I'm not done, Nick. Sorry about that. I thought I had to go. I don't. I've got two whole minutes. So carry on.
We have 2 minutes.
Yeah.
A minute and a half.
Yeah.
There's something about the writing on that amazing writing.
Yeah. That's Kevin Gershon. Kevin and Steve Langford do that, and it's just it's classic. In fact, it's so rapid fire, I wind up missing half the lines.
Oh yeah, do you know that they did a version of that at Webb in Baltimore?
Yes, I think that was probably one of the most copied features, because at that time news was still mandatory, and you know, stations, especially pop stations or soul stations, the last thing they wanted to do is the news. So you know, even before 2020, people would have sound effects and other things, but there was, you know, something about what they were doing in Detroit that just captured everybody, and literally there were imitators coast to coast.
Yeah, we were. I mean, we had them here, and they were everywhere, like you said. But that was phenomenal, and that was that Drake format. That was, you know, those guys were amazing.
Yeah, it was interesting. A lot of people thought that 2020 was designed to sweep the quarter hours, but when it debuted, there were no quarter hours. Arbitron was not the dominant rating service. So it was for other reasons. But hang on a minute. Don't go away. We'll pick it up after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Thank you.
banger. Saxa-woogie is the boogie, and you're bound to get the boogie beat in your feet.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That was the original 1941 on Decca, Louis Jordan and his Timpani Five, Saxa-woogie. There's also a version out there. It was a 1944 radio performance, and a lot of times when people are looking for that song, they run after that one. But that's the original on Decca. Back to, and that was, by the way, Dave. Dave on the north side said, play that after 11 o'clock, so your wish is my command, Dave. Hope you heard it. All right, so back to Nick. Sorry about the interruption, but that was the news, not written in the 2020 style, but informative nonetheless.
It's fine. No, it was a great time in radio and a great era, and I really enjoyed it. I still enjoy it now when I hear it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's just the way they designed it was ingenious, I think, because it got all the facts out there. It was written in rapid fire. It was delivered rapid fire delivery. But, you got all the information. Bing, bing, bing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, the version they're doing now, I always say, these are actual news stories, just not written in the way you'd expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the current news stories. And those producers are great. They do a great job.
Well, good. Glad you like it.
Much appreciated.
Oh, absolutely. So what else is going on?
Well, I had, speaking of 800, I had a question about PJB. We were talking about PJB the last time we talked, and there'll be some other things, too, but that'll be another phone call. I haven't found any air checks of them. I mean, I know they were. They did do Top 40, but I've scoured, and I can't find any. Are there any air checks of it?
You're talking about Bonair?
Bonair.
Yeah. You know, I doubt it. And that's really a shame because certainly I was not the only person glued to it in the mid-60s. And, man, it blared into South Florida and really up and down the eastern seaboard there to a degree. And, but that, I don't think I've ever seen one or heard one.
Before I called, I was looking on the internet and I found an air check of 1966, and of course it was the religious format. So
well, but you see, that was it. It was a religious format then too, but not all the time. You see, the preachers would buy an hour here and there, but they'd love to have sold it out. But I mean, that's the way the Top 40 came, because it was filling the hours that weren't sold. It wasn't really, I don't think it was ever, a promotional push to have Top 40 radio. It's just they did that in between paid religion.
So it was filler in between the religion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But, some nights it was just pretty much wall-to-wall Top 40. It depended who paid. So
well, the unique thing about... going back to CKLW, the unique thing about them was, as a kid growing up, listening to radio, I used to always, Christmas Eve, there was nothing on the radio, right? But there was CKLW.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doing a regular format, and it was great. Mm. I had another quick question about, because I'm always fascinated with Alaska. And, you've traveled to Alaska.
Oh, yeah. Driven a few times, absolutely.
Before we run out of time, I was talking to somebody about Barrow, Alaska.
Oh, well.
And what is that? The most remote place in the world.
Yeah,
right?
you're not going to drive there. And it's not Barrow anymore. It's got another name. Like everything else, they changed it to a native name. And I couldn't. It's Ut something. That's about as far as I can go. Ut something. And
Have internet there.
Well, sure. Sure. They
get high speed internet. So.
Yeah. It's you know, like over 300 miles north of the Arctic Circle, and there's about 4,500 people who live there. Now, most of them are natives, but you can't drive there. You can only get there by plane. So, yeah. You know, everybody talks about it because it's so far north, you wind up, you know, getting for 64 days, you don't have any sunshine. And, you know, then, of course, in the summer, you got nothing but sunshine. So
I was going to say, now, right at this time of year, it's light right now.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
24 hours.
Absolutely it is. But, you know, by plane, it's a couple hours from Anchorage. You know, so at least an hour and a half from probably an hour and a half from Fairbanks. But, you know, it's not only in winter is it dark for like 2 months. You don't see sunlight for 2 months. But it's not unusual to hear the weather forecast and it's like minus 30. You know, that's the high. But if it's between mid-May and August, that's midnight sun. That's 24-hour-a-day sunshine. But it's in Upiat, you know. So you're going to see the museums of whaling or things like that.
I would imagine the depression rate up there is.
Well, again, when you're talking about Barrow or whatever it's called now, this is mostly, you know, native people who this is all they've known for centuries of their families. You know, this is not like anybody decides they're moving to Barrow. In terms of, and Anchorage, by the way, never gets the full darkness or the full daylight close, but no, Fairbanks kind of does for a brief period of time. And there is a certain amount of depression, and whether that's seasonal depression, you know, sad, if you will, or not, who knows? But other than the indigenous people, most people are fairly new who came to Alaska. It's not like they've got generations. So, and for different reasons.
Well, are Anchorage and Fairbanks fairly big cities? I mean,
Anchorages. All right, Anchorage is really good. Nothing wrong with Anchorage, as far as it has a Nordstrom's, you know, so, you know, all the things that matter. It used to have a really nice Sears Town, of course, that's gone now. Had some nice gun ranges, bowling alleys, you know, and all that. And depend, you know, it had some areas of very luxury homes, Upper Hillside. My God, that'd be nice. And then it had things like Spinard. You know, a Spinard divorce was they kill you. Sorry, anybody in Spinard, but anyhow, you know, and downtown, the governor, I think it was Tony Knowles was governor last time I was there. I'm not sure, but in any event, he had a delicatessen in downtown Anchorage. And, you know, they had all the TV stations and the radio stations, and it was a town. It's a city. It is. Anchorage is absolutely a city. And it seems like it's much bigger than it is because it's a feeder city for so many thousands of miles. So, you know, Anchorage probably maybe the entire metropolitan area, if you want to call it that, had maybe 250,000 people. But it felt like there was 1 million people because it was serving so many people from different areas, you know, because of the distance. Now, Fairbanks is another deal. Fairbanks is smaller and decidedly, I wouldn't call it urban. And, of course, you got military, too, heavily in Fairbanks in particular. But no, Anchorage is a city, and Fairbanks is. And the funniest thing about Fairbanks, in fact, when I drove John up there, I had to explain on the way, because he'd been to the Jersey Shore, and you have, too, I'm sure. You know, you go to the Jersey Shore, and you see the quintessential Jersey Shore apartment building is like two stories, and it's got an outside walkway. You know, you walk up the steps and there's an outside walkway up and down, and that's it, right? You know what I'm talking about. Got a picture of that in mind's eye? That's downtown Fairbanks. Now, I remember the first time I saw it, probably when I drove up there in the early 70s, is I just gawked at this because, of course, you know, here's Fairbanks where it's like below zero and all this. And all I could think of is, well, maybe after the war, some people from northern Jersey moved up here and built apartment buildings just like they got, you know, on the Jersey Shore. But it's the damnedest thing. So that's my little tidbit about Fairbanks. And, of course, you know, I'm not sure John knew exactly what I meant until I got there and showed it to him. I said, see, it's like, what is this? And I don't know why it's in Fairbanks, but there it is.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
And I guess the restaurants are great, too. So.
Oh, some are. And, of course, you know, with Anchorage, you got all the chains and stuff. So, you know.
Oh, yeah. You would. You would.
Yeah.
Because I listen to the radio from up there, and I hear the commercials, and, you know, I get hungry in the middle of the night. And I
hear
these, you know, call, pizza or whatever. It just, anyway, that's what I have for tonight. I'm going to call you either later in the week or next week with some more stuff.
Okay.
And,
I'll look for it.
I appreciate your time. And
always good to hear from you. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, good deal. So we'll pick it up right there. And we have Fran and Austin coming up next. We got Cindy, we got Ruth, we got Eduardo, we got James, and you two coming up on WGN Radio.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down. When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. That's a version that Cindy's probably not heard, but she requested People Are Strange, of course, The Doors. And Jim Morrison and Robbie Krieger wrote that in 1967, and it was a hit. All right, so we'll get to Cindy as well, but we have been, no, I don't know if it's old or not. I've lost sense of time here, but I believe Fran is in Austin. What's happening, Fran?
Hi, Raleigh.
What's going on?
Well, you were talking earlier about Carmel and the whole thing about you can't wear heels.
Yes.
And Carmel is, because I used to live in Monterey, and I went to a church that was in Carmel, the Unitarian Church there. And it is a strange place.
They don't allow fast food.
That was one of the things I was just going to mention. They don't allow fast food. You cannot eat an ice cream cone on the street.
Yeah. Yeah, see, right there. This is reason that I don't go. And the Carmel thing, they passed that no fast food, not that they had it, but they decided they were never going to have it. And I think Clint Eastwood was part of that.
I think so. I know he was part of the no ice cream cone thing.
Right, right. And I think he had an interest in a restaurant, but he was certainly spearheading that no fast food thing. And I'm like, Clint, you know, so no thank you.
I think it's been that way for I don't know how many years. And, of course, you don't have any, there's no real addresses. You just have to know where the house is.
Right, right.
Now, and then, you know, you have to go to the post office. And somebody one time said, oh, you'd love living in Carmel.
No.
You can walk to everything. And I said, yeah, you can walk to everything if you're a mountain goat.
Right. I love that. Yes, precisely.
You know, because everything you want to do is either uphill or downhill, and, you know, it's like, you know, give me nice, straight, even sidewalks, please.
Thank you.
I don't like all this rustic stuff.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And they're so snooty. Oh, you know, you just can't have a McDonald's here.
Right, right. But I think, and I'm pretty sure Clint Eastwood had a restaurant, so that might have been part of that fast food thing. But I think that when he ran for mayor, which would be like the mid-80s, he actually wanted to overturn the ice cream cone law.
Oh, okay.
But the whole big deal is the city plan wants to preserve its village-like aesthetic, you know, so rotten streets and all of that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
I think right about the time that Clint was trying to overturn the ice cream law is about the time that they actually made it a law that there would be no fast food. And probably because prior to that, no fast food places were probably trying to come in there. You know, this is expensive real estate. But they wanted to make sure that would not be the case, and they wanted to make sure that they had more dog-friendly patios and all that. And not that nothing wrong with it, but there you have it.
Oh, they also didn't have buses.
No, of course not.
Buses. Well, they had buses that went there in the morning and in the late afternoon, because they had to have buses to
get the workers in. Yeah, get the workers in there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Right, right. But it's not like they had a local Carmel, traffic metro, so to speak. They did not.
No, nothing. You know, and this friend of mine said, oh, you should live in... I said, for one thing, I don't have the money to live in Carmel. Secondly,
yeah.
I wouldn't live in Carmel if I did. You know, it's nice to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there.
No.
But anyway, last night we were talking about dog food, and I don't know, I might have told this story before, but I'm sure. My mom worked nights, and my grandmother used to take the dog food, for our dog, and then she would put, you know, whatever people didn't, you know, whatever leftovers that, you know, wasn't enough for people to eat, but, you know.
Yeah.
Like the little carrots or a little this or that, and put it in dog food, and this dog was spoiled. I mean, she would heat it up.
Yeah.
And it was sitting on the stove, and my mother comes home at 2 o'clock in the morning from working all night, and she's hungry, and she sees this thing on the pan on the stove, and so she has a couple of bowls of this, what she thought was stew.
Yeah.
So my grandmother gets up the next morning, and she says, what happened to the pan of dog food?
I love it.
And my mother said, well, I don't know, but that stew you made was really good.
Oh, no.
And she said, that was the dog food.
Now, did she make the dog food herself?
No, it was like, you know, canned dog
food.
Oh,
God. I was thinking, you know, if she made it herself, it could have been good ingredients, but canned dog food and your mother liked it. Well, that speaks volumes.
And I said, you must have really been hungry. Because, you know, but she did put carrots and, you know, like some other things in it. Just the stuff that people, you know, that people didn't eat or that kind of thing.
And yeah, leftovers.
To make it kind of, and she'd put the leftovers in, she'd put it on the stove and, you know, heat it up a little bit, and it wasn't hot, but it was still on the stove, so my mom thought it was some stew, and she heated some.
Oh, God.
And,
oh, God. Hang on a minute. Don't go away.
Okay.
I need a break. God knows, I think I'm going to vomit at the thought. We'll pick it up right after the news right here on WGN Radio.
Feel sorry for you just because.
Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that was, Donna Beloit who wanted to hear that. Dumb Blonde, early Dolly Parton, on Monument, 1966. In fact, Fred Foster produced it. Curly Putnam wrote it. And, of course, Dolly was singing Dumb Blonde. All right, so we got Fran in Austin. And I'm sorry, I have absolutely no idea what we were talking about. Oh, yes, I do. Wait a minute. Dog food. Yes. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Right. I'm trying to forget that.
I was just thinking, is it actually true blondes have more fun? I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
I like that song. I've never heard it before.
Oh, yeah. It was like I say, early Dolly on Monument. And, it was a Curly Putnam song. So, yeah.
All right. But anyway, back to good old dog food.
Oh, God.
This is not as bad. I was staying at somebody's house, and I'm hungry in the middle of the night. So my friend was asleep, so I thought, well, you know,
yeah,
I was comfortable enough in their house that I could get up and look around and see if I could find anything to eat. So I found this box of cookies, and I thought, okay, oh, here's some cookies. And or crackers or something it looks like.
Yeah.
And I ate one. I'm like, this thing doesn't have any taste.
Dog biscuits.
What is wrong with this thing?
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out because I had my guide dog at the time, and she was like right up on me, like, "What are you doing?" You know. And I should have guessed by that because she was like putting her paw up on my leg, like, you know, and I just thought she wanted me to pet her.
Right. Right. That's great. Dog biscuits.
I'm eating milk bones.
Oh, God.
And I didn't recognize them as milk bones because the milk bones I bought for Berdine were big, and she had a small dog.
Uh-huh.
And so these were like little tiny milk bones.
Oh, God.
And, I think Berdine must have thought I was out of my...
Right. So what are you eating? What are you eating my food for?
I when she told me, I said, "Oh, that was why Berdine had her face up next to mine, like, give me my."
It's right. Give me my stuff. That's mine. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Because that's what I always gave her for treats when she, you know, was good, and then we came back from a walk or something. You'd always get her milk bones. You're like, why is she eating my milk bones?
Exactly, exactly. And now you realize that, you know, what we give to our animals, if you don't think they're tasty, it makes me wonder why she did think it was tasty.
I wondered about that. Yeah, you know. And some of those dog biscuits, when I was a little girl, I had a small dog, and the dog biscuits kind of smelled good.
Oh, God.
So I did put one in my mouth, and it didn't taste very good, but that was on purpose. But this was totally, I even thought, well, if it's cracker, maybe I'll go put some ranch dressing.
Oh, God.
So I thought, well, maybe I'll get a little thing of ranch dressing and just dip it in that. Maybe it'll taste better.
Oh, God.
No better. Even worse.
Yeah, they're not meant for that. No. Oh, God.
Yeah, and so I had gotten a little bowl of them. So, of course, since I couldn't eat them, I put them down there for Berdine to eat, and she was like, all right, finally.
Yeah.
She just chowed them down.
Well, theoretically, most of the ingredients shouldn't be toxic, but I still don't think it's a good idea. But for the most part, humans can survive a bout of dog food like your mother did. But, on a regular basis, forget about it. But, you know, obviously they're not going to kill the dog, so they probably won't kill you either.
Well, unfortunately, I know that some people who, you know, are homeless or whatever do eat that. There's a song about that. It's by the Austin Lounge Lizards, and it's "You Can Eat Dog Food."
All right, I'll play it.
Okay.
Okay.
Hopefully you like it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Their stuff is good. So absolutely. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, I know you like that for the drugs I need.
Oh, yeah.
I know you really like that.
Yes.
One.
Yes. Well, we will hear "You Can Eat Dog Food." Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Raleigh.
All right. Bye. So, yeah. Now, if you're going to eat it long term, by the way, there are things that can hurt you because they have, you know, synthetic vitamins that are good for dogs that may be not good for you at all in high dosages. I don't know. Plus, they have a much more lax regulation for bacterial contamination than the stuff you would normally eat. So, yeah, not recommended. But one or two dog biscuits probably won't do you in, though it is a sickening thought. We've got Cindy in Chicago. Welcome back to WGN Radio, Cindy.
Before I forget, I'm WCPT, like, I don't know what time, at 12 o'clock midnight, goes to 1240.
Okay.
Instead of 8200.
Okay.
To that guy, I mean, he, I don't know what time maybe
okay.
he would to listen to it during the day.
Whatever.
I don't listen to it too much. Maybe on Sunday night, the guy's okay on Sunday night.
Uh-huh.
But then, anyhow, thinking about Cicero, I Googled it, I couldn't remember. I guess that community just is still very troubled. Because there was a mayor that I Googled her name, I couldn't remember it, and neither could Mike. Betty Lauren Maltese.
Okay.
And then they sold her, she went to jail for something where her mother got insurance. She was milking money from she was the mayor of Cicero.
No, I'm aware. She robbed them of $12 million.
Yeah, and she was Al Capone's relative, and then.
I don't know how that happened because she was from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, originally.
Well, she was. She was a relative.
Well, might have been, but originally started in Baton Rouge. Now, maybe her husband, Frank Maltese, might have been. I don't know. Yeah.
I remember her house was like worth, like, at the time, like $300,000, and they sold it for $79,000 to pay off her debt.
Hmm.
You know, I don't know why I felt sorry for her, but I just thought, well, what's going to happen to her? Where is she going to work?
Well,
I think she worked for an insurance company after that. I don't know why. When I was younger, I used to feel sorry for people like that.
Well, she was released in 2010, so I guess she's been back a while.
Yeah and then, that's what I called about. I told John I got my second shingle shot.
Okay.
Yesterday, and I got so sick today.
Uh-huh.
And I took one Tylenol, and I finally called the pharmacy, and she said I could take two. And I feel better now.
Okay. Good.
So with the two Tylenol, but I would recommend that everyone get the two dosage and get.
I'm sorry, I don't recommend anything. I never go there, Cindy. That's something that I don't play a doctor on the radio. Neither should you. People should make their own informed decisions. So I don't recommend anything.
Okay. Well, my only reason was I had a great aunt Julia who got it on her brain.
Anecdotally, you can come up with a million stories, but these are personal decisions that people should make without the input of people who probably talk too much. That would be including me. So, I don't recommend that anybody do that.
Is this political?
It's only political when it, by the way, no. Vaccines are only political when they're mandated. Then you've got a very hot topic for politics. But as far as things that aren't mandated, no. But again, it's a medical decision, and what's right for one person may be very wrong for another.
I'm changing the subject to something else.
Okay. Headline, where are we going?
Well, anyhow, I don't know if this is political, but what's he do you think the COLA raise will only be 3.8%, or do you think it'll be more?
Oh, I'm not. You know, there's a lot of people who are trying to forecast that. We'll know in October.
Okay.
We don't know yet, because obviously it is based in part on times that haven't happened yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows? You know, last year it was 2.8%. And so it takes in, I'm trying to think of exactly what the period of time is that it's based on, but we're in it right now.
It's based on August, September, and October.
Okay, so it's not even July. Okay, August, September, October. So anybody who is telling you now what it's going to be, they're guessing.
Okay, and then I just have one more thing. You know, just that, you know, I just love Ruth and Gurney. Sometimes I understand her, and I just wanted to tell her if she wanted to get that Martha Washington cookbook, if she still cooks.
Okay.
I went through it. I got the one, a used one. It was like one third the price. And because it was kind of expensive, and I looked through it, and maybe there's one recipe that I could. I mean, it's like real old fashioned recipes.
Okay.
You know, that, and one I could, I think it was a fork roast, maybe I could make it. You know, for cooking, see, it's not cooking season right now. It's sandwiches, tuna salad. Oh, and then the other thing is I'm going to go see, Saturday, I'm going to see The Odyssey. And I read The Iliad and The Odyssey when I was a sophomore in high school.
Okay.
And all I remember about The Odyssey is he gets on an island with the Cyclops. That's all I remember about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember the Trojan horse in The Iliad.
Okay.
And that's all I remember.
Well, you'll get to see the 2026 version. Hope you like it. Okay, I just looked it up. I was right. It's July, August, September. They release it on mid-October, but the data is July, August, September.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now you know.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah, so of course there's already people saying, you know, here's what we predict it'll be. Yeah, well, right. I know Miss Cleo's no longer with us, but I'm sure there's the California psychics would be just as good at that, I would assume. So we'll see where it goes. We've got Eduardo in Tampa. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, Raleigh, sorry about that, head speaker. Yeah, everything's going well with the job, except there was a guy that was coming out with a wheelchair because he was very anxious to get out of the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, everything else is going well, so.
Good.
Yeah. But I was going to comment on a story I saw. This is in Costa del Sol in Spain.
Okay.
Apparently there was a pump that, I guess, broke loose and it released this toxic gas, and it's in, like, 60 tourists to the hospital.
Huh.
Yeah. This happened over there in Spain, and yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's almost like that guy that went into the pool and he got electrocuted because something happened with the pool.
Right.
Remember
right.
that one?
Yeah, it happens.
Hospital? Yeah.
Absolutely. So. You know.
Just got to be careful where you go, and
well, and some of it's fate. Usually, pool electrocution is faulty wiring, and you know, when you've got lights and pool pumps and all that, you can you know cause that. But
okay.
for the amount of people who jump in a pool versus the amount of people who are hit with an electric shock, this is infinitesimally small. So. You know, mm-hmm. now if you suspect that there's a problem, you know, for God's sakes, don't jump in the pool to save them. You know, cut the power first.
Yeah, or if you smell something very...
Well, whatever it is. I mean, but if there's any yeah. question, for God's sakes, don't be a hero because you'll be toast too. Cut the power.
Right.
So, That's where that is. And also use non-conductive objects if you can to pull people away from, you know, the deal. But again, it's a very, it makes the news because it happens so seldom, thank God.
Yeah, and have you, how's it been with those, I know that's been talked with the Canadian fires. Have you smelled the smoke over there?
No.
Okay. Definitely not here yet, so.
No, I don't think so. But it's interesting. I don't know. I should look up. There's probably a smoke forecast. So how far south? I don't know. Can you smell the?
We get this because I see that on the weather. We get that Sahara dust, they call it, from Africa.
Right. Let's see. So how far? Well, they say Canadian wildfire smoke can drift as far south as the Mid-Atlantic region of Virginia. But okay. You're usually, it's really got to be something, you know, weather connected that you'd ever encounter that in Florida. But, you know, if you've got upper level wind patterns and high pressure systems and all those kind of things, anything's possible. But the real key is where's the jet stream? And that will always tell you. And generally, it's, you know, concentrated in the Midwest, the Great Lakes, things like that. So, So, I don't expect you to smell anything.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, hopefully it's not going to be, it comes back. I mean, it came back before, but hopefully, it's not going to be coming back soon. Like next year, so.
Well, you know, who knows?
They'll get it under control.
You know, it's hard to tell as far as that goes. But the Earth is ever changing, and climate is ever changing, and so it's hard to say. We'll see.
Yeah, I saw that even that story on Lake Mead. I guess they're having problems with the water.
Well, sure. I mean,
low water levels.
Yeah. I mean, it theoretically could go dry. I say theoretically, it's not going to go dry, but it's tremendously low now. Okay. There is a reservoir very near me in Globe and San Carlos, and the San Carlos reservoir. Every fish died. Every last fish died. 100% death, and that's because the water level got so low that the fish couldn't survive it. But
sure. This
is not the first time that this has happened on that reservoir, and it won't be the last time. But yeah, things are dramatically low level. However, the last couple of weeks in Arizona, we have had nonstop rain. And, you know, it's not going to be as good as if it was nonstop smoke in, in the winter in Flagstaff and, nonstop snow. But it wasn't. It was not a snowy year. So, we're hoping that there'll be enough rain that it'll make a difference. It certainly caused flooding. But other than that, I haven't looked to see.
Yeah.
Like Lake Roosevelt is one that you take a look at. And, of course, Mead and Powell are the two major bodies of water. But I don't know. In fact, that reminds me, there was a town not far from Globe that was supposed to have their water turned off on July 1st. And I don't remember what happened there. But hang on a minute. We're playing commercials or something.
Okay.
Don't go away.
Drove me out of my head. while you never shed a tear. Remember, I remember all that you said. Told me love was too plebeian. Told me you were through with me. And now you say you love me. Well, just to prove you do, come on and cry me a river. Cried a river over you.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that was, 1955 on Liberty, actually, for Julie London and her husband Bobby Troup for that Cry Me a River. And I'm looking here to see, because I played that because someone requested it, and now I'm trying to figure out who it is. So it's here somewhere, so at least I knew to play it. But, here we are. Brian and Seneca wanted Cry Me a River. All right, so 888-876-5593. Back to Eduardo in Tampa, as you were saying.
Yeah, were you talking about Lake Mead?
Yes, absolutely.
And going down.
Right, right. And, you know, I mean, it's not the first time it's been at drastic levels. It ebbs and it flows. There's concern. Like I said, it was that area, Kearney, which is very near Globe, that was forecasted to lose all its water July 1st. And had happened, see, most of these places don't have water under the ground itself. So they're getting it from somewhere. And there's allocations. And like a lot of it's going to come from Mead. You know, some of it, of course, river dividing California and Arizona and Nevada. That's very contested right now. But in any event, this little town, Kearney, was getting its water from a river off the San Carlos Reservoir. Well, like I say, the San Carlos Reservoir went dry, lost all the fish, all that. And so, you know, all the news was Kearney will lose all its water by July 1st. And on paper, it would have, because it uses about 290, and I don't remember how they measure it, like hectares or something, uses that a year, and their allocation this year was 72. So, but what happened was they started this drive where they told people, you know, of course the usual, don't water your lawn or all that, but it got to the point where it told people, don't take showers, and literally, and so, you know, you don't need to shower more than once a week, you know, don't flush those toilets, and on, but anyway, they managed to now push it back, and now they're expected to lose water August 15th. They probably won't, they'll do something else, but it's at that point, but you know, it's the desert, and finally...
Sure.
Finally, yeah. Maricopa County, which is huge, and that's Phoenix. Finally, they passed a law, thank God, where a developer could not develop unless they could prove a water source for like 100 years or whatever. Because what we had here a couple of years ago was there was a very expensive area just north of Scottsdale. And the homes were like $1 million homes. And what they were doing is they were buying the water from Scottsdale. Well, Scottsdale decided they were no longer selling it, which they have the right to do. It's their water. And so they stopped selling it. So all of a sudden, these people had no water because all their water was hauled, which is something we have here. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't buy a home where I had to have hauled water, but a lot of people do. And so all these people suddenly had no water. So eventually they're hauling it from somewhere else, but it is hauled. And there's a lot of areas that are. But so now finally the government said, nah, you're not going to develop an area if it's based on hauled water. You're going to have to prove a water source. And that, because there's Buckeye was supposed to be a huge area, which is just west of Phoenix. And it is pretty large, but most of it now is fallow land because there's absolutely no water source. So what they thought would develop into the next Phoenix, it ain't going nowhere unless somebody can figure out how to get the water.
Raleigh, this is why I don't know what they think about when they think consider having, this is a whole new subject for another time, but the data centers.
Well, and that's a problem. And believe me, that's hotly contested here as well. At the very least, and some people are suggesting they should just have them underwater. Probably not a bad idea. But in any event, I think that what the cities need to do is force the data center to improve the infrastructure to the point that they're viable, not that they can come in and expect the infrastructure to carry them. Because the big argument, of course, is because the property taxes will go way up when that type of a use is happening. And so this is on the radar everywhere, even areas that are not tremendously water deficient. And we'll see. But yeah, a lot of people thought, well, you know, data center, that'll be our answer. We'll make all this tax dollars. Well, no, because you're going to lose your infrastructure unless you know what you're doing.
I was just, while I was on hold, I was watching the PBS, and they had Janesville as one of the places, and that got shot down. I guess they wanted to put it where they had a Chrysler. Chrysler used to be there in Janesville.
Right,
like
right.
Yeah. So that got knocked down.
Well, again, I think that was debated because that was a GM plant, and that was about 250 acres. And so they've now tabled it because of resident opposition. And what they're doing is there's some type of a referendum that requires the voter approval now for the changes, which, you know, that's okay. Probably not a bad idea as far as that goes. But the bottom line to this is not the structure that it'll be using, but as you mentioned, the infrastructure it'll be using, the water, the power, and other things. So you've got a lot of places that are you know, trying to create ordinances that will prevent data centers. That's going to be tough, but I think they absolutely can create ordinances where the data center is going to be responsible for the infrastructure, period. And yeah. So, you know, some of the concern of the residents, you know, that's probably hogwash. But some of it is legitimate when you're talking about the amount of water and the amount of electricity. And so, so Janesville's delayed it, and we'll see where it goes. But you know, you're having a lot of people who are just absolutely not for no conditions and any of that.
And your callers, I'd be curious to know what they think about that and in their area, because you get callers from all over.
Well,
it'd be interesting thing to hear stories about that.
Well, again, I think there's a lot of misinformation about this, too, but it's a no-brainer that anybody using the infrastructure should be responsible for paying for the infrastructure. And that's not just paying for the power they use, but paying for the ability for the power to be there. You know, it's not a question of just paying the power bill. It's just that in many cases, the amount of water and the amount of power is insufficient as it stands. And in most of these cases where data centers have gone in to date, the data centers haven't been responsible for that, and it's caused some big expenses. So you know, we'll see what happens. But yeah, whoever was who suggested underwater, maybe that's a thought.
Good idea.
Yeah. Why not?
Okay, Raleigh, I'm going to get off and I'll call back in.
I'm
whenever
counting
you get a chance,
it.
So maybe you play Royer's Chicago.
Yes, I haven't forgotten about you. All right. You
okay.
Betcha.
Thank
okay,
you.
Thanks. Yep. Yeah, in fact, that will probably be our next bumper. So what are we doing? We're talking to Ruth in Gurnee, if she's still with us. Ruth, are you still there?
Hi, Raleigh. Good evening. My sister lives in North Scottsdale on Aloe Vera.
Oh.
By the way, I have a couple of comments. Plus, she owns a lot of property out in that area also. She's related to the Wells, and I'm related to the Ogdens. So, but anyway, two streets in Chicago. You know, I had gone back for over 40 years with this Oriental Merchandise Company.
Uh-huh.
And I've always been just so thankful for the corporate Chicago employees with the jobs in Omaha, Nebraska. And you call there, and you put your order in, and you talk to these wonderful people. And I hadn't gotten any catalogs for a couple of years. And I was ordering my things from code numbers that I had previously. But new items, I didn't see the catalogs for a couple of years. And I kept mentioning it to them. And they told me somebody was stealing the catalogs from the post office. So, okay, I was able to do what I wanted to do. Well, I recently wanted to replenish. I still have a backup supply of the fortune cookies for the 50 states for the quincentennial. So they changed. They do an oversee call center, and because I don't have a catalog with a code number, I can't order my bulk supplies and get free shipping without my code number. and I used to be able to talk to them directly as of 2 months ago. And this has all changed with the jobs overseas. And I mention that to you because when somebody brings it up in front of Raleigh, there's a solution. Now, Cindy, I'd have loved to have gotten with her to go to Ravinia and see Harry Connick Jr. And we'll find out more about that Martha Washington. I couldn't quite get what she was saying all completely. But I know why George Washington brushed the horse's teeth.
Okay.
All right. You said you wonder why, what it was. Okay. So you asked me why. Well, I kind of have a witness for this from 1966 and my trips to Washington, D.C. and the Mount Vernon home. And when I sat down overlooking the Potomac, I said, my fellow classmate, I've lived here before. And I recognized everything in the home. And so I didn't know who I was as far as a member of the household. However, what I think is the reason why he brushed the horse's teeth are, according to legendary Arthurian legend, fallen knights were horses. And he may have had a tremendous amount of psychic ability. Certainly an angel appeared to him at Valley Forge, told him why, what would happen to the United States and about what was looming with the situation documented at the Smithsonian. Also, that surprised me that he made a point of documenting that angel appeared to him, the angel that guards the United States. So the horses. I think the horses are connected to the Hall of the Seven Stars.
What does this have to do with brushing their teeth?
Well, he seemed to want to clean the teeth for a specific reason involving maybe astral projection or time traveling. There's a specific reason behind it, which he was incredible, very knowledgeable, probably one of the biggest pharaohs out of Egypt to be here in the United States. And so, therefore, he knew a great deal as all of the secrets of the pyramids.
I'm not computing how this gets to teeth brushing.
Well, he did it specifically because there was a reason behind it.
Yeah, but you
it
don't...
It wasn't just something...
You don't have any idea what it might have been.
It's something to do with Egypt.
Okay.
The Hall of the Seven Stars.
All right.
Because he did six horses, okay? He was using the number six.
Uh-huh.
On six horses.
Oh, God help
and
me.
And so, okay, how about this one? Bob Hope appeared in a commercial for Kmart. It could have been his very last commercial. And he had all these bolts of lightning in the background. And he had the goddess Liberty there. So, in that commercial. So, there may have been something specific regarding the... Washington, District of Columbia, another goddess. There might have been something very specific on why it was pertinent that their teeth were brushed.
Wait a minute. You've tied this into Bob Hope and Kmart? I can't get there.
He did a commercial.
I don't doubt it, but it had nothing to do with George Washington's horse's teeth.
Well, there's something that has
aisle seven,
to do.
Blue light special.
Maybe the obelisk has a secret in Washington involved in it,
uh-huh.
And that's named after him.
In other words, you have absolutely no idea.
I think it has something to do with
right.
pyramids in Egypt.
Very good.
And
all right.
The horses represented something.
Uh-huh.
And if I go any further, then I'm going to get into the
paddy wagon will come. Yeah.
if I get any further with the animals, I'll get into the same situation with Lionel, and now he's only on the radio one night a week.
Uh-huh. Well, that was his choice. Don't tell me you're going to tie this into someone else.
I had a last conversation with him, and he didn't come back again except for now one night a week. He was on every night.
Yes, he chose
but
to do that.
He wanted specific information about that, the lion over there at Lincoln Park Zoo. By the way, I got a lot of stories about Cicero. I knew Frank Maltese, Betty Lawrence's husband. I almost went for a job with her, but a Cicero Life reporter warned me, stay away. Interestingly enough, she adopted a girl, Ashley. She must be in her late 20s by now. But there was a dog that came running down off of 19th and Cermak Road. And I was out there. It was during my homeless years.
Mm-hmm.
And this dog comes going south, and its face was glowing red coals.
Uh-huh.
And I go, that's it. I can't. Nobody's going to hear me screaming. I can't get up that fast. There's no place I can go. It went right by me. It passed by. It was large, could have been a German Shepherd. It went so fast, the whole head was burning red coals. So that was another Cicero story, and I have many more interesting ones.
Uh-huh.
But you know I'm out of time. So
yes. All right. Well, thank you.
I want to win Guinness for the least amount of time spent on the Raleigh James.
Oh, God, no.
All right.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Don't
appreciate it. All right.
Don't let the bed bugs bite.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Good night.
All right. Oh, man. Can you make anything out of that? Because it's sometimes I feel like I need an interpreter, like it's a foreign language. All right, we'll pick it up. Maybe we'll get an answer. It's hard to say. We've got, James on the South Side and John in Covington and Scott in Valparaiso and not much time. So we'll do this and get right back to it on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, we'll forego the bumper. We'll just move right along here and see what is on John from Covington, Kentucky's mind. What's happening tonight, John? All right, we lost John. Probably went to sleep. Smart move. Let's see if Scott and Valpo is still awake. You still with us, Scott?
Yes.
All right, what's happening?
I just wanted to be short and sweet. You're very patient with your callers. there was a call last week that was, I think it was a radio guy. You know, you went out for a while with a different caller, and you like radio. Art Bell did his whole shows with radio guys sometimes. Now, my eyes were glazed over, but I was like, hey, he's into this, so that's fine. It's your show, and I think you're very patient with your callers. And maybe two other things. Maybe George Washington was just trying to get on his horse's good side, if he believed they were former knights. Or maybe he wanted to fight off future rumors that his horse had wooden teeth. Anyway.
Hey, your guess is as good as mine. Thanks for the call. Do it again, Scott. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. So it is the waning moment, and short shrift it's going to be, but of course there's tomorrow night, but we can start off when I find the magic twanger here and with James on the South Side with a preview of stories. So, okay, James, what you got?
Okay. This one I didn't get a chance to do last week. The AI just passed a Turing test.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, and I thought now this isn't good news for us then. Because if AI can actually pass that test, then we've got a problem. What will we really know?
I don't know, but I was more concerned with the end of Salisbury Steak.
Oh, yeah, that was, because apparently it has gone out of style, out of favor. And, of course, part of that has to do, I think, with some people thought,
healthy. It's the breadcrumbs that are doing it. Yes, it's not keto. Now I'll be honest with you. I remember Salisbury Steak from all those Swanson TV dinners. I didn't realize that the ground beef patties had breadcrumbs in them, but hell, so does meatloaf. Who cares? So apparently, that is not the meal of choice now. Although I do think they still sell it. A Hungry Man, I think, sells it, but somebody does. I would also think that the Depression would help this tremendously because the breadcrumbs made it cheaper.
It stretched it.
Yes, of course. So, what happened, unfashionable because it's processed. Now, you see, I don't buy that for a minute because most of what everybody eats is processed no matter what. So.
Yeah, so.
What, you're going
to. It makes you think.
Yeah.
I think people thought, I'll get rid of it, but they're still eating hamburger.
Well, that's exactly right, and they're eating it fast food. God knows what's in that. But I had no idea till I read this article that it was absolutely now verboten, that Salisbury steak is no longer any good. Because, I mean, after all, it was synonymous with TB dinners, that and the rubber fried chicken. So, yeah.
I remember the Salisbury steak.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. With little mashed potatoes on the side and the gravy. Yeah, absolutely. I think we all remember it.
Yeah.
And none of us died eating it. So.
No. Okay, that's also was the death of a 2,200-year-old Robin Hood tree.
And that's what we're going to leave for tomorrow night because we're out of town. So call me earlier and I promise to get to you earlier.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Okay, appreciate it.
Take care.
You too. We thank Bob for keeping us on the air. Couldn't have done it without him. We thank John for screening your calls. Really couldn't have done it without him. But above all, I thank you for calling. Wouldn't want to do it without you. I'm Raleigh James. That's a wrap. It's WGN Radio.
Nosy neighbor nab, plus stealthy store sting, and walled-in wannabe. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Real news. Real stories. Real fun. Beverly Hills Bunglers. In Beverly Hills, three masked mischief makers staged a smash and snatch, but a sharp-eyed witness wasn't buying their burglary baloney. Police say a caller spotted suspicious vehicles and would-be break-in bandits prowling before dawn. Officers later boxed in one car, found burglary tools, and busted the trio on suspicion of conspiring to burglarize a business. Moral of the story, when the neighborhood watch is actually watching, the crook's clock runs out fast. Aisle spy. Shoplifting schemers may soon find their five-finger discounts facing a futuristic foe. In Hawaii, Home Depot is reportedly testing nearly invisible anti-theft technology that silently sniffs out suspicious shopping shenanigans before sticky-fingered swipers slip out the door. The high-tech tactic aims to stop soaring store stealing without turning every aisle into a police lineup. Retail raiders beware. The shelves may be stocked, but so is the surveillance. Movie theater mishap. A California crook's burglary bid became a brick-and-mortar meltdown when a suspect allegedly tumbled from a movie theater roof and wound up wedged inside a wall. Trapped and tangled, the man reportedly spent nearly 10 hours pleading for help before officers on a coffee break heard his desperate yelps. Instead of escaping with loot, the matinee marauder got cuffed and carted off to the not-so-happy Hooskow. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.